I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Guy who claims he just don't believe the fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight inside me. Yeah, walking down the real life, I'm fighting in a foreign deity. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the real life. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down fighting inside of me. And that's the name of this program here on White Resistance Radio. .com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and of course those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European Heartfire. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Heard a very interesting news story yesterday. It involved complaints by a negress in Peel County. That's the county just west of the city of Toronto. I used to live there in Port Credit. And anyway, the nature of the story is this. This negress was complaining to the Ontario Human Rights Commission, or rather tribunal, about the treatment of her six-year-old daughter. Now, you've got to keep that in mind, 6 years old. The complaint was this, that the police came to the daughter's school and handcuffed the young negress, cuffed her hands, cuffed her feet, then turned her over on her stomach and cuffed her hands behind her back. Don't forget, she's 6 years old. Okay, well, you might wonder where this happened in North Korea. Well, the story's a little bit more complicated. The police had been called to this school three times in a month. Now, this is about a kindergarten child. Well, why would the school authorities call the police? Well, let's see. On one occasion, she bit a staff member through a jean jacket and drew blood. Don't forget, we're talking about a six-year-old negress. Not a wild lion, not a... an orangutan, a child. Okay, on another occasion, she assaulted a teacher with a pair of scissors. On another occasion, she drove a bicycle right into another student. Yeah, trying to hurt the student, run the student over. She'd thrown various objects around the school. When the police came, they didn't immediately throw them, put the handcuffs on her. No, she ran away, ran through the school, ran into a school assembly, and eventually had to be captured. And so, okay. the story is, according to the Negress, that the reason the police handcuffed her was, get this, oh, I guess they gave it away. She's black. That's right. You think? I think what the police did was that they tried to restrain a person who's insane. You almost wish they'd put the nightstick on her. Or maced her. I mean, she sounds like a devil child. This is not one meltdown once. I'm not saying that you could, excuse that. But, I mean, that would be one thing. But we're talking about what seems to be a permanent situation. And the question I would ask is, okay, what do you do? Well, okay, with the Human Rights Commission, the tribunal has not yet made its ruling, so that may remain to be seen. But what I find just appalling is that a child like this would be sent to a normal school. And believe me, having being a teacher, let me tell you that increasingly teachers are terrified of having to deal with people like this. There was a time when people would simply, when these crazy people would be put in mental homes to deal with whatever it is they're dealing with. See, one of the problems in North America, and this occurred in the United States as well as Canada, is in the 1970s, it was decided by the psychiatric profession, in cahoots with cheap politicians, and I guess it sounded good, that they would try to, here is the terminology of the time, try to integrate these people into society. So instead of keeping dangerous mental patients in mental homes, they would be integrated into society. Now, of course, that would be for all but the most extreme. And of course, that appealed to cheapskate politicians. Oh, good, that'll save money. Well, sometimes saving money isn't the only criteria. What it did is it put many people back into society who were not able to survive, or at least not able to survive for very long. There were various schemes. Social workers would help them get an apartment. But, you know, if you're not completely in your right mind, or you're schizophrenic, so you've got some good days when you're on your meds, you've got some bad days if you don't take your meds, and so on. And so people would not pay their rent. Well, eventually they would get evicted, and they'd be put on the street. And it's not being very satisfactory. Anyway, I'm going to leave that topic. The oppression in England is becoming more and more insane. I was informed, and I can't give you the name of the person yet. I will probably in a broadcast or two. I was informed by a friend in South Africa that a visitor to England was held for 9 hours by the British authorities, his laptop confiscated and scoured, and he was deported. The anti-free speech persecution by the present conservative government. I underline that. This isn't the whack jobs in Labour. This is the whack jobs in the Conservative Party. The attack on freedom of speech is amazing. I was sent an item just the other day about a poster that was circulated in the British Army urging soldiers to rat out other soldiers if they appear to be extremists. And what would be an extremist? Well, if a person says, I'm a nationalist. I'm a patriot. In what universe would that be an undesirable quality to have in a British soldier? Or would it be fair to say, well, actually, I'm a jihadist. I want to bring down Britain. Oh, well, that's okay. Diversity is our greatest strength or something. Some barmy nonsense like that. No, Britain is in the control of the very nightmare forces of repression that George Orwell foresaw. And what is so appalling to traditional-minded people, who many of whom look to the Conservative Party as the bulwark of their values. Well, it isn't anymore. It's the bulwark of the values of the internationalists and the Jews. Theresa May is every bit as much a creature of the Zionist lobby as some in the Labour Party are. In fact, it might even be argued that Jeremy Corbyn, who is a neo-communist but is the leader of the Labour Party, is more in favor of freedom than Theresa May is. Anyway, here's the latest. Extinction Rebellion protesters removed. Scotland Yard is pushing to prosecute all 1,130 people arrested in the Extinction Rebellion protest as it called for tougher penalties to deter similar demonstrations. The Metropolitan Police have set up a dedicated unit of 30 officers to investigate the public order offenses allegedly committed by the arrested protesters, who ranged in age from 19 to over 70. It is our anticipation that we are putting all of those arrested to the Crown Prosecution Service, said Lawrence Taylor, Deputy Assistant Commissioner. If successful, it would be the biggest mass prosecution for civil disobedience in at least 37 years, surpassing the anti-nuclear protests at Upper Hayford in 1982, where 752 were arrested, and the poll tax riots in 1990, where 339 were arrested. The extinction protesters arrested include canoeist Etienne Stott, Olympic gold medalist in the London 2012 Games, who was carried from Waterloo Bridge by four officers as he shouted ecological crisis. More than 70 activists, including a 77-year-old woman from Powys in Wales, have so far been charged over the demonstrations, which brought parts of London to a standstill and cost the force at least £7.5 million. Today, or, May 31st, was supposed to be the sentencing of Dr. James Sears, the editor of Your Ward News. Dr. Sears was, along with the publisher, Leroy St. Germain, was convicted under Canada's notorious hate law back in January on two counts of willfully promoting hatred against privileged groups, in this case, women and Jews. The trial was a farce, and Dr. Sears, I think, has finally come to the understanding, which I urged on him some time ago, that he was not well represented by his lawyer. I don't want to tell tales out of school, but the defense was not well run. The prosecution relied entirely on two expert witnesses. One expert witness talked about anti-Semitism, which I would argue was largely irrelevant. We would argue that you have the right to be, in the broad sense, anti-Semitic, that is, critical of Jews. You do. And the other expert was an expert on sexism, and this was a militant feminist lawyer from British Columbia. Well, I would argue again that you have the right to be a sexist. You do. The defense did not offer any witnesses. The judge in his judgment, and it was a trial just before a judge, no jury, and that's another one of Dr. Sears' complaints. The judge relied completely, he just took big chunks out of the reports of the these two experts who should have been challenged, particularly on the fact that to be sexist in the present broad sense of the term, or anti-Semitic, that is critical of Jews, even though that's a misnomer, anti-Semitism, it does not constitute willfully promoting hatred. So the defense was incompetent from that point of view. And I had urged from the very beginning that the defense lead a witness, preferably a university professor, who could explain satire. Because your war news is a very satirical paper. And what you might say in satire has to be taken in a different way than if this was non-satirical. Satire uses humor to create an effect. And that had to be explained. Now, as the judge was going to rely entirely on expert testimony, it had to be explained not just as a passing comment, but in detail. You see, our judicial system is largely based on the assumption, rightly or wrongly, that the judge doesn't know anything. The judge only knows what is presented as evidence. The judge generally is not supposed to assume things or even know things from general knowledge. The judge has to make his decision based on the evidence and on the arguments, or what are called submissions. So if you don't say it, or if you don't bring this forth as evidence or as an argument, it doesn't factor into the decision. Anyway, Dr. Sears this week fired his lawyer and accused him of having blown the case. So this threw a spanner, as English say, or a monkey wrench into the works. So the the sentencing, which was supposed to be today in Toronto, did not occur, and Dr. Sears has a number of other things up his sleeve. I can't reveal them right now, but he's a very accomplished and wily individual, and the sentencing is now being put over until July the 15th. He is going to launch a constitutional challenge, Dr. Sears also faulted his lawyer for not leading an expert witness, J. Michael Jones, who's an expert on Jewish history and Jews, and would have validated most of what Dr. Sears had written. He refused to lead him either, so as a witness. So the defense was not well run. In the news story about this, and I've given you the gist of it, the Crown, that's the prosecution, called for the maximum 6-month sentence for each offense to be served consecutively, or 1 year behind bars, plus 3 years probation, during which Dr. Sears would be prohibited from publishing any kind of writing, written material. At the hearing, the earlier portion of the sentencing hearing, Dr. Sears argued that Your War News gave hope to the otherwise voiceless, saying it provided a safety valve for men who might otherwise resort to violence. However, Crown lawyer Erica Whitford cited several victim impact and community impact statements in which people expressed how finding the free newspaper on their doorsteps made them feel unsafe, vulnerable, and in some cases, re-traumatized. This is extremely dangerous. The Crown wants the maximum sentence because, or citing the victim community impact or victim impact statements in which people expressed how finding the free newspaper on their doorsteps made them feel unsafe, vulnerable, and in some cases, re-traumatized. Now, this is what I would call snowflake justice. I must be punished if you feel unsafe by my words. Not words that, where I write in your face and say, I'm going to take a hammer and beat your brains in. No. But I write opinions that you don't like or that are critical of the group you identify with. And now you feel traumatized. Give me a break. Or you feel unsafe. Well, are we responsible, or have we reached that point where we will be responsible for the feelings, not of everybody, but of privileged groups? I must say, when I drive around parts of Southern Ontario and I drive by a bus stop and I see every face at that bus stop is non-white, or I drive by a school that's is being dismissed at the end of the day, and I see groups of students walking home, and I have trouble finding more than one white face in a group of 10. I feel traumatized. I feel unsafe. I feel burning anger at what the traitors have done to my country. How they have enabled. I didn't an invasion. These aren't people who, our political leaders of both parties. These are not people who made the best deal they could with the invading enemy. No, they brought the enemy in. And that is a special form of treachery. They created and enabled the invasion. I don't blame the third worlders pouring into Canada. Hey, there are lots of goodies here. You know, if somebody offered you a $300 envelope for walking into a room and just taking it off the table, I guess most of us would. Hey, if you're willing to give away your country, well, maybe I should be willing to take it. But you can be quite sure that my feelings are not considered. No, it's the feelings of privileged minorities, and all of this is drama. Well, I felt traumatized. Why? Because you received a copy of Your War News, a satirical newspaper, and it was critical of one of the groups that you're a member of, in this case, women or Jews, or radical feminists and Jews. So you didn't like it, but that's life. And the only way it could be anything other than that would be in a society where you can't say anything critical of anybody. In other words, some sort of idiotic utopia. No, this is a matter of power. Politically powerful groups, or privileged groups, like I call them, basically want to shut down dissent. There's nothing new about this. This has gone on for all of human history. It's just that it appears to be permitted today. Well, I got a fundraising letter yesterday from Andrew Scheer, and you might ask, well, who's Andrew Scheer? Well, he's the leader of the Conservative Party. And it says, Dear Paul, yeah, that's me. But this is actually an email. Dear Paul, Canada is the greatest country on earth. Well, yada, 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 wonderful. Well, you know, I'm proud. Yes, I appreciate Canada. I'm not sure if I say it's the greatest country on earth. Okay, well let's not quibble about the small stuff. And he goes on in his fundraising letter. Goes on and he says, it's built on a solid foundation of enduring values, democratic institutions, the rule of law, and fundamental and universal human rights. We absolutely must protect these values because they are what set us apart. Well, I would also think that other countries have the same values, but okay. They allow Canada to offer what so many countries simply cannot, the freedom to preserve and pass on their cultural traditions, the opportunity to live in peace with those around them, and the economic freedom that so many governments around the world deny their people. Okay. Well, I won't quibble so far. But with each passing day, Justin Trudeau and the Liberals undermine this proud legacy. Well, I'll agree with that. In 4 years, they have not only undone the progress the previous conservative government made to strengthen our immigration system, they've managed to undermine the long-standing consensus that immigration is indeed a positive thing for this country. Oh my God. No. He's consumed the Kool-Aid. Yep. The previous conservative government strengthened our immigration system. It made a few small reforms. That's true. However, this is a huge however. However, the conservatives allowed in unprecedented hordes of third worlders, only exceeded by the present trust fund kid and the liberals. Even during the time of a huge economic downturn of 2008-2009, the biggest recession since the Great Depression, the then conservative Prime Minister Stephen Harper was proud of the fact he kept those immigration numbers up. Now you talk about delivering a jackbooted kick to the testicles of the unemployed, and that's it. So at the very time official unemployment was close to 10%, real unemployment double that, he brought in about 250,000 more people a year. This is insane. Anyway, that's the proud conservative record they're boasting of. And he complains that the liberals and their policy have managed to undermine the long-standing consensus that immigration is indeed a positive thing for this country. Well, that's actually a good thing. If that bit of nonsense has been undermined by the outrageous policies of the Liberal government, then that's a good thing. No, immigration is not a positive thing for this country, or more exactly, at this time, it's not a positive thing. As a generalization, it's a generalization that is neither true nor untrue. There was a time when we needed large numbers of people, as we did in just before the First World War, to help quickly populate the prairies. Otherwise, the Americans were looking greedily upon this largely empty land. Okay. Is immigration a positive thing right now? Well, a study that Andrew Scheer knows about by a former reform member of the House of Commons, economist Herb Grubel, and his associate, Patrick Brady, has determined that each year immigration costs the Canadian taxpayer now over $40 billion. Now that's not the cost of administration, that's a different and additional charge. No, the cost. Well, how did they determine that? Well, very simple. They looked at the taxes contributed to the pot by the newcomers, that cohort that came in from about 1985 to 2005, 30-year period, almost all, about 85% from the third world. So are they contributing more or taking more? Well, counting taxes at all levels, federal tax, income tax, sales tax, and various other taxes, what they put into the tax pot against what they took out. And they took out, or take out, over $40 billion a year more than they put in. Immigration is a positive effect on Canada? No, it is not. Okay. Sadly, his letter continues. Sadly, under Justin Trudeau, a record high number of Canadians believe that immigration should be reduced. Not sadly, rightly so. It's common sense. And he says that's a bad thing? Scheer is a blithering idiot. But as the baby boomers retire, we will need workers, innovators, and risk takers to sustain a thriving economy and ensure we can maintain the high standards of living that we Canadians enjoy and rightly expect. What about the children of the baby boomers? Like my sons. We need workers, and risk takers, and innovators to sustain a thriving economy. That is typical leftist establishment, one world bullshit. Our people are hopeless, so we have to bring in immigrants to innovate, to take risks, and to work. No. We have our own workers. Right now, in relatively good times, we still have about 6.3% official unemployment. Real unemployment will be nearly double that. No, we don't need workers. And this fear-mongering, well, as the baby boomers retire, well, actually, almost all the baby boomers have retired now. Most have retired. So, and we still have unemployment because the economy is changing in ways that we can't predict even 10 years out from now. Only if we have a labor shortage today would it make any sense to even consider immigration. And there might be other ways of dealing with that too. But this is an oft-repeated bogus fear. So as the baby boomers retire, we will need workers. Yeah, but we've got workers. The next generations. Innovators. We mean everybody in Canada is retarded. And we're not getting innovators and risk takers. We very often are getting relatives of people who are already here. I'm not saying none of the people who come here are innovators or risk takers, but many of them are not. In fact, if they were such hot shots, they'd be doing well back in their own country. We need the world's best and brightest to choose Canada, and we want to integrate them fully, socially and economically. Well, we better select them better to contribute as previous generations have done to building the Canada we know and love, and to ensure it remains the great country it has always been. When newcomers to Canada succeed, Canada succeeds, but they're not succeeding. Or in a general sense, they're not succeeding. Some are, of course. But like you, conservatives have questioned the current government's ability to preserve the integrity of our system. Justin Trudeau and his ministers responded as they always do when confronted with criticism, with more rhetoric and personal attacks. Yes, they as much as called the conservatives racist for wanting them to the government not to allow hordes of illegals to pour across the American border at the Roxham Road, basically an unsecured area in the province of Quebec. And this is a problem. Now, to their credit, the Conservatives did stand their ground on that. I will safeguard and emphasize economic immigration. Yeah, but you don't get it. As long as there is considerable unemployment, we don't need anybody. I will stand up for families and ensure that spouses and children can be reunited. There's nothing preventing that right now, incidentally. I will ensure, this is Andrew Scheer in his fundraising letter, I will ensure that our system prioritizes people facing true persecution, focus government sponsorship of on the victims of the four atrocity crimes, and restore integrity to our system by supporting the consistent application of fair rules. Well, that's wonderful, but should we really be taking large numbers of refugees? Now, that's another question. It's dangerous to ask. I'll tell you why. Many refugees are, to be quite frank about it, are damaged goods. If they've been through a lot of trauma, will they really do well in Canada, where, among other things, they're going to have to make a major adaptation? That's right. Coming to Canada is going to mean many adaptations and changes. If they've already been through a lot, is that really the best thing? If a person's a refugee, bring them to Canada. Why not assist them to in a refugee camp to survive and then return to their country when conditions change? Now, this may have to be adapted on a case-by-case basis, but why is bringing them to Canada seemingly the only half-wit solution? Goes on to say, I will improve credential recognition and make it easier for new Canadians who have existing skills to meet our standards to apply their trades here. I will work to allow those who enter Canada as low-skilled workers a permanent path to residency, making sure wages are fair and worker abuse is prevented. Well, that sounds pretty good. But wait a sec. I will allow those who enter Canada as low-skilled workers a permanent path to residency. Why? Will they be able to survive in Canada? And do we need low-skilled? Earlier we were saying we need the best and the brightest. This is, of course, the traditional confusion. I will work to reunite survivors of genocide who've already settled in Canada more expeditiously. As I said earlier this month, when sharing my vision for Canada's foreign policy, Conservatives will bring back the Office of Religious Freedom so we can protect our shared humanity and promote interests in the dignity of all people. Though the Liberals got rid of that, and I agree with Scheer on that. Okay. We'll work to put an end to illegal border crossings at unofficial points of entry like Roxham Road by closing the loophole in the Safe Third Country Agreement that allows some people to skip the line and avoid the queue. Okay, now that's right. So in other words, to put it more conventionally, he will crack down on the invasion across our border by illegals. Well, as I've said in commenting on the American scene for a good many years, that's only the beginning. It shouldn't even be, it shouldn't even be a matter of discussion. Illegal. If you're in the country illegally, what is there to discuss? Out you go. I mean, that's what ought to be. This of course has been a problem in the United States, where illegal immigration has been a cause of a good many nationalists, and for a while, some years ago, of some relatively good Republicans. But in terms of the immigration invasion, it's a small point. Yes, of course, the illegal should be kept out. Absolutely. And Trump is right. Build a wall. Do whatever you have to do. Mind the border. But most expeditiously, if anybody who entered the country illegally was immediately turned back, that would be the end of it. It's the fact that there is a process in place. And just as it's often said that possession is 9/10 of the law, similarly, if you already have your dusky rear end in the country, you're betting on the fact that you've got a reasonable chance of staying. Okay, if you don't, you don't. But, you know, get here and you've got a reasonable chance of staying. Well, that should be reversed. Anyway, though, the issue of illegal immigration should be a no-brainer. The more fundamental question is one that quite clearly Mr. Scheer doesn't have a clue about, or if he does, he's not on our side, and that is legal immigration, because Canada and the United States are being changed by legal immigration. There is what is something being called the Great Replacement. The European founding settler stock of the United States and Canada is being replaced by immigration policy. And there's a D-Day. And that's the day when we tip over the edge and the European founding settler people become a minority. In the United States, that will be around 2041. You know, like 22 years from today. In other words, if you are the father or grandfather or grandmother or mother of a little baby, bouncy baby boy, when that boy is about to graduate from college 22 years from now, he will have become a minority in the country his ancestors built. In Canada, the estimate I saw more than a decade ago from the government was about 2050. But government's been pouring in more and more third world immigrants since those estimates were made. But when the intake was about 200,000 a year, it's now over 320,000. we will ever hit that D-Day probably a year, couple of years before 2050. So in other words, when that little baby boy just born today in 2019 is 31, his parents and grandparents will have bequeathed him a country where he has become a minority. Wow, we sure loved the kid, didn't we? What a curse to impose on them. No, the more important thing about immigration is that it has to be massively curtailed or stopped altogether. That's what immigration reformers, or many of them, in the United States and Canada are increasingly calling for a moratorium. Stop it all, at least for 5 years. Stop it all. And this is really the more difficult part, when immigration is allowed again, it must not upset the ethnic balance, which means it can't be, year after year after year, 85% of the third world. No way. Let's see, what else does Mr. Scheer say before he asks for some money? Well, yes, that's a couple more quotations, but essentially the next line is, send me some money. Well, I'm sending him a letter saying, no way, Mr. Scheer, you don't get it. There's no difference between you, or let's say, no meaningful difference between you and what the liberals have been proposing. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the flighty side of me here on whiteresistanceradio.com. Gotta take a musical break here. And this is a song by a woman whose father was a big country western singer, Pam Tillis. Her father was Mel Tillis, and he's a man who stuttered, except when he sang. This is... I'm having a lot of trouble with my feed, so I may have to switch horses here. This is an album, or a CD called Aryan Awakening by Heritage Connection. I know these young ladies, and they've been singing for a number of years. They're sisters. The granddaughters of Pastor Tom Robb. So I'm going to play a few cuts from their CD. This is Heritage Connection.
His eyes are lit with fire, yet sadness marks his face. His heart burns in desire to bring freedom to his race. Once they ruled an empire, but lost those glorious days. They toiled now in factories as no more than slaves. He's an Aryan warrior, he holds back to the land. Do not let our people down without the battle's hand. He's an Aryan warrior, an eagle taking flight. We shall reign in victory. Like knights of old in stories told of the history of his race, he battles the invaders with unfailing warrior's grace. He fights the noble poor, driving back the evil horde, fighting Zog and his minions, never asking for reward. He's an Aryan warrior, bring hope back to the land. He'll not let our people down without any final stand. He's an Aryan warrior, an eagle taking flight. Shall reign in victory at the final fight. He is an airy warrior in traditions very old, battling Zionist menaces, going back that which they stole. The birthright of his people, a heritage long lost, the identity of his people, he will earn at any cost. He's an airy warrior, every hold back to the land. You'll not let our people down without the final stand. He's an airy warrior, taking flight. We shall reign in victory at the final fight. He's an airy warrior, he'll hold back to the land. He'll not let our people down without a final stand. He's an airy warrior, like an eagle taking flight. We shall reign in victory at the final fight.
That's Aryan Warrior. Great song there by Charity and Shelby Pendergraft. This is Living Nightmare. Thank you.
and promise for those who stand strong. Be firm in your vigilance, for suffering is long. Trumpets of justice sound in the wind, governing the masses for the war to begin. My pride will bide, from the ashes we shall rise. We fight for righteousness, lest our people die. Passing of ages away and late, in survival of a race, in the weak are to be saved. We take it up our post as a sign by our Lord, sharpening the axes and balancing our swords. Why pride will wide, from the ashes we shall rise, to fight for righteousness, lest our people die. We stand as we are threatened, but with mercy we fight. Evidence of our victory will prove might is right. Success is accomplished, our phoenix will soar. And justice for the Aryans will prevail evermore. Why pride will wide, from the ashes we shall rise. To fight for righteousness, lest our people die. Why pride will wide, from the ashes we shall rise. To fight for righteousness, lest our people die.
Some great songs there by Heritage Connection. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com.
In days of yore, from Ditton shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle shamrock rose and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our